I am someone who've been through every rank within the fitness space, from basically sleeping on the gym floor, training people at outrageous hours in the morning and evening, to having nothing, to actually being able to now build a very successful business and help other people to do the same.
What do you think in terms of Dubai's way of changing your approach to business? Like, has it changed your business in a way by being here in Dubai?
Usually if you're coming here, you'll probably know someone who knows someone. Fasting helps. Calories can't really tell the time. I'm not saying you can eat whenever you want. Like, eating before bed will not be great for digestion. And
you said, like, you need someone to hold that accountability, to hold you in point and saying, hey, you're not doing things right. You got to do it.
Exactly. But it turns out he was on steroids anyway. So, like, that was just kind of a hook. It was just like, it got your attention. I guarantee he probably doesn't even do that all the time.
All right, we're here with another special episode with a great friend of mine, Josh Mooney. Pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I always start with this podcast with a question for people to understand who you are. For those that don't know who's Josh Mooney, who is he?
Good question. Well, I've played quite a few roles within life. Like, we were just speaking just then, but like, for me today, I am a man who owns an agency, and I help fitness entrepreneurs, coaches, doesn't really matter what level you are, to build a business, to create wealth, passive income, and create a life that has freedom. Because I am someone who've been through every rank within the fitness space, from basically sleeping on the gym floor, training people at outrageous hours in the morning and evening, to having nothing, to actually being able to now build a very successful business and help other people to do the same. So I'd say that's the man I am today now.
But how did you start this fitness journey from the very beginning?
I mean, it all comes from my background. Like, I was very sports related at school. And it was something I always fell back on through hard times and good times. And I didn't know it was actually my passion and the route I wanted to go down until later on in life. You know, when you go to school and then you go to university, you get told to do the right thing. And, you know, so I went to university to do estate management, which I wasn't interested in at the time at all. I'm still not really. But then I realized the thing I should be doing was the thing that I was consistently doing all along, and actually try and help people with that. So, which was fitness. So I went in to do my personal training diploma, my nutrition degree, and then I started to help people. And it was a very, very slow journey. You know, social media wasn't as big thing back then. It was like back in the Twitter days. I sound like a dinosaur. And then, you know, I just built a group of people I'd start to help. It was all in person. I was working at a gym in Manchester. It was tough. You know, and this was before like any online coaching, right? You know, it was all in person.
Was there like a specific period in your time where it truly defined that this is what I wanted to do?
Yeah, I think so. I remember I was teaching one woman. It was in a private gym in Manchester. This is when I got out like a public gym, and she had a wedding. I've forgotten her name now. She's a blonde lady, and we dropped like 3 or 4 dress sizes for her wedding. Oh. And it was the feeling it made me feel, helping people, making people feel good. It gives me goosebumps. it is something that money can't buy, you know? If you're in the business where you're helping other people and you actually are genuinely helping other people, it's the best thing in the world. I think that was a big turning point for me, because it wasn't just about me looking good, you know?
Mm.
Obviously, I have to be a product of what I'm selling, essentially, right? You know, I was in shape, I always have been, but when you get the feeling of helping someone do the same thing who thought they couldn't to begin with, that's awesome.
And you get value with that as well. That's,
yeah, exactly.
That's more than you can ever dream. Like, helping people at the same time, you get some type of monetary value, something that can keep you thriving in this business.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wonderful. But what is like some of the, let's say, a lot of people that usually go through social media, they look at those fitness trainers, they look at those fitness entrepreneurs, and they see them with a great body, and they believe that they can get the same body that they have within a few months. Do you think that's realistic for most people? Like, you look at that chiseled 6 abs,
I think it's
fully polished body, everything looks like a Greek god. If you,
I think now, like today, it's unrealistic. Everything's polished, you know, everything's too perfect and photoshopped, likes, camera action, all this kind of stuff. Even if you look at movie characters, right, back in the day, it's interesting, I saw this yesterday, Wolverine, right, in his first Wolverine, he had his hairy chest and he was in shape. But if you compare him to the Wolverine on the latest Deadpool, he is absolutely jacked. He's, and he's like, veins popping out. But society's changed. So I think now what is realistic in 6 months isn't sold that way, you know, and also there's a lot of variables to get in shape of what people want to do, because like, for me it's my job and I've always trained, I've always been in shape, so it's built in me, but other people don't have the time, the freedom, you know, so it depends like how much time you've got. You need to make it a lifestyle, because if your program has an end date, usually your results do too, so you need to make it part of your life.
We'll definitely talk more about that, but let's get back to you a little bit. What is that common misconception people have about you when they look at your social media?
I think what I post on social media is, it's not exactly who I am. I'm a very grounded, down-to-earth person. I grew up on a farm, you know, like I've, what people see on there is not necessarily what I am. And, you know, like I could open up about those things, but social media is a lot more work orientated now. So it's to attract eyeballs to either help coaches or get people in shape. So that's what I want to portray. But yeah, I'm a bit of an iceberg. I'm a lot deeper than what my Instagram.
Does it bring the wrong audience for you though?
Does it what?
Does it bring a wrong audience?
Of course it does sometimes, you know, like just to mention before, I did go on like a TV show and that was before I was quite lost at that point. I was still always doing my fitness, but then I would bring my audit, that would bring eyeballs and followers, which weren't necessarily useful to me, but it would look good because there were the numbers there on social media. But now, like, it's broken down into demographics. So if you look at it, people who follow me now from a TV show are not useful for what I'm doing with work. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel that reality TV being there, did it impact your personal growth?
For sure. It's eyeballs, you know, like it, to be fair, like even if these people did come and follow me and they weren't my target audience, they might see someone word of mouth that might need to get in shape and that, oh, have you seen this guy? Maybe he could help you get in shape. So I guess like it does have some sort of snowball effect. If you can get eyeballs on you and you can leverage them at some point, it's going to be helpful.
I see that attention now is the real currency.
Yeah, for sure.
It is the something that everyone's trying to get on.
Look at, you know, so it's a bit of a funny topic. Andrew Tate, right? He's a great example of doing outrageous content to get the whole world speaking about him. And now he's trying to zone in to help young men. Okay, so he's like, you know, he's got the masses, he's got the attention, and then he's like kind of niched in a little bit to what he wants to do. So, yeah, attention is key.
What do you think about, like right now, one of the biggest people that I know in the fitness industry right now at this time,
Ashton Hall.
Yeah. What do you think of his way of attracting attention? He's like doing all this type of running, intense running, and so, I don't know, breaking the mirror. Every time I turn, he's breaking either a mirror or the TV. He's doing that with attention grabbing.
So I speak to Ash and what he's doing is literally doing what works for him with the algorithm, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the leads come and then you can separate those leads into whatever he wants to do. So he's doing his mentorship, he was doing his coaching. So now he does a bit of like what we do with coaching coaches kind of thing. So it's like you find what works for you. And that will fade out. His morning routines will fade at some point and it will go into something else. You might have seen a small transition within his content now. He's not so much doing morning routines, he's implementing other things, but it's to keep the engagement. And then you can separate those leads where you wish, essentially, or what they want to feed into, depending
on what you're... I'm curious to see, like, how many eyeballs he's actually getting every single day.
He's getting a billion. Every 30 days on his...
professional dashboard thing?
Yeah, it says a billion. That's outrageous, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, like, if you think about it, like, even 1% conversion of that 1 billion, like...
Well, the crazy thing is, it's not just him. he started it. Well, he was the first person who blew up massively, but there's other people doing the exact same thing and they're blowing up. So it's obviously something about that. I couldn't bring myself to do it. I'm sorry. I was like, I'm not doing it. But like, it was working. It works, right? So then you just got to leverage those leads. Because I know the coach is doing the same thing.
Mm.
And they're using it for their business.
And it's working.
Yeah.
Interesting. So let's talk about Dubai. What do you think, from your perspective, your end, why did you move all the way from the UK to Dubai?
It was during COVID, and it was a time where, you know, you were pretty locked down, literally. and I came here on holiday originally, and I ended up just staying because it was the best place to be. And this was before even knowing all the benefits and, you know, how amazing it is. It was the fact that I just didn't want to be at home, but then you fall in love with the place, the safety, the security, the cleanliness, the environment, the opportunity, the growth. It's literally endless. It's not a hard sell to move here.
I've noticed, like, right after COVID, a lot of fitness influencers came to Dubai. They live now right here in Dubai.
So coming from that world, right, if you want to shoot in England, you have to wait for a sunny day. Well, you have to, you know, you have to book everything in advance. Everything's so efficient here. It's sunny the whole time. So you can just work relentlessly. So it's so good for growth. And in a world where social media and attention is key, this is the best place for it because you can shoot every day and it's beautiful.
Interesting. Because a lot of people would say, why not just go to Miami? Recently, I've been in Miami right now. And comparing to Miami, while Miami does have a beautiful weather, the standards that I've seen here just does not match. Once you're spoiled here in Dubai, you feel like everywhere else is just a lower level of service. That's what I feel.
For sure. The efficiency and the safety in Miami, you know, I think Miami is just a bit of a reckless version.
Mm. No,
not slating it. I love Miami, by the way, but I don't think it beats Dubai.
Definitely. I mean, it has everything that Dubai offers. I mean, so opposite. Dubai has everything that Miami offers. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Like, if you're talking about beach clubs, Dubai has it. You're talking about the residential luxury waterfront apartments, it's available there. You're talking about the super yachts and yachts, it's available right here in Dubai. So everything in terms of the gyms, numerous options right here in Dubai compared to Miami.
I think it's an interesting one, actually, because I think if you are from the US, you will be drawn to somewhere like Miami. But if you're from Europe, I think you'd be more likely drawn to Dubai rather than going across.
It's closer.
It's closer, but also time zone wise.
Mm.
So for a lot of my clients and my team, I'm ahead of everyone, which is nice. It means I can have the morning to myself. If you're in the US, you're playing catch up the entire time.
8 hour difference. Yeah. 9 hours, depending where you are. What do you think in terms of Dubai's way of changing your approach to business? Like, has it changed your business in a way by being here in Dubai?
Yeah, it has. I think by being surrounded and having the opportunity to meet people who are much further ahead of me, it makes me think more maturely about my actions and how I should be running my business and, you know, just being a better person. You know, I think it's very easy to be positive. I think it's very easy, especially in the UK, to sit and wallow if things aren't going your way. I swear the weather has something to do with it, but it makes you level up here for sure.
Interesting. So for some people who are coming, newcomers to Dubai, what is that one secret spot in Dubai you would recommend them to grow, to be that ambitious people that you're talking about?
It's the whole place. So it's like, you know, I've been invited, even when my first 2 weeks here, I remember saying to my partner, and I was like, I'm being offered on a mastermind, come on a boat party. And it was just with other successful entrepreneurs who just invite and they just talk on these yachts, and you go for dinners, and you know, you just hang out together and you get contacts, and if I need something now I could probably message someone. And that doesn't really happen anywhere at home, to be honest. I think that's the beauty of it, the networking you get here.
So if someone is lonely and their first time coming as a beginner here in Dubai, how can they get into that circle of people?
That's a good question. I usually, if you're coming here, you'll probably know someone who knows someone. Mm. So you're just going to kind of know that. But and also something to know, I was my first 2 years here, I was very lonely. So if you don't, because I didn't put myself out there, and I was in a bad relationship at the time, which didn't help. So I was not in a good mindset, but I didn't put myself out there to go to events. And sometimes it's a bit scary to put yourself outside of comfort zones either day, sometimes, but you need to go out there and meet people. You know, I got asked to go to a sales event, which I didn't even know what kind of event it was the other day, by an amazing entrepreneur called Thaddeus. And I walked into a room and I met several people who I'm now in contact with and I can use for my business. And I was like, you know, it's nervous to go into rooms like that. There was 100 people in there. I ended up getting on stage and doing a talk. Like, but if you don't know, like, you know, if you don't go, you'll never know. Sorry.
So would you suggest that someone who's a newcomer to Dubai just get into anywhere that potentially can get you introduced to people in general?
Yeah, I think the bottom line is being able to put yourself in uncomfortable situations, because something's going to come out of it. Either you're going to grow or you're going to meet someone.
And never be in your comfort zone. Always try to find those places where you can make yourself thrive and grow.
Yeah, and it's quite easy to get comfortable here because it's amazing.
It can be tempting and distracting at the same time. It really depends. Like, Dubai offers every type of level of distraction and at the same time every type of opportunity for you to grow. You can either choose to party every day, or you could choose to spend time with the family. You can also choose to be spiritual, or at the same time you can be the person who leverages the opportunities that exist there and build your business up forward.
Yeah, it depends what kind of person you are.
Yes,
for sure. And I think a lot of people, when they do come here, they have that full holiday mode, and they, you know, for 6 months or maybe like less, they're going a bit crazy. And that point can either make or break you. You know, you go home with your tail in between your legs, you know, it wasn't the right place for me, or you'll calm down and realize it's a very good place for growth at the same time.
A lot of people might even end up getting broke. That's why they go back home.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I'm sure that's happened to people.
They spend a lot of money and then like, oh, okay, now I don't have any money. I have to go back to my parents' home.
Yeah.
That's what I feel. Now, talk about Dubai. How did it really inspire you differently compared to other cities that you may have lived? You mentioned that you lived in Arbella as well.
In Spain, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of perks to moving here with your business and personally as well. But I think one of the main things growing up and looking into the future, like, you know, I was speaking about kids earlier, I'm already, I'd want to bring my family up in a safe environment. And there's no safer place on the planet that I'm aware of.
Did you feel like UK was not safe enough for you?
Do you know what? It's not bad, right? But like in Dubai, it's so safe that you almost go home and you think you're unsafe. Yeah. Like, obviously there's the news doesn't help because they just plaster crime across it all the time, scaring you, right? But there are elements to it which are actually quite unsafe. But I think I've got to go back to the UK in summer, and you won't be taking any of like my nice watches or anything like that, purely because it's just, I've got that mindset, you know? So yeah, it's a bit of...
that you gotta be careful, cautious the whole time you're walking in a place. You can't flash the things that you want to flash. For example, if you got a beautiful watch, you can't wear it at all certain times. If you got a nice car, you're worried maybe your nice car might be, I don't know,
yeah, but so like in Miami, another thriving place, they're allowed guns. You can have people just walk up to you. Now if you go down South Beach, and I swear you'll hear gunshots go off and stuff like that. So It's terrifying, you know?
For sure, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of also drug problems.
For sure.
There. I mean, homeless people, I've seen people who are most of the homeless people usually are very related to drinking problems or drug related problems. And that's why they're mostly homeless in Miami. That's what I'm sure.
LA is bad for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I encounter when it comes to the homeless people. They either have a drinking problem or a drug problem most of the times. Dubai tries to assure that the people here don't get used to having those drugs. So if anyone has a drug position, I'm sure you've seen them. They're just immediately, police catches up with them and try to remove those bad system out of it. Alcohol, you got your own place to serve alcohol for those people that drink it. But you'll not see homeless people as much here in Dubai.
I've not seen one.
Yeah, you'll not see it. And even there's just several facilities where they can help those homeless people.
Yeah.
They are, yeah. So you'll not see them sleep here. Never. I've never seen someone sleep on the streets in the city of Dubai.
It does actually amaze me how well they cope with the amount of, or the influx of people moving here every day and how they just keep expanding.
You know, they have the goal of almost now is going to be 4 million population in the city of Dubai, but they have a goal by 2040 to have 8 million. Population in Dubai.
Wouldn't surprise me.
So that's double the amount that we have right now. And with the infrastructure that they're setting up with the roads, you see every time there's a new bridge, new intersection, new tunnel, and now they're having driverless taxis going to come eventually. Flying taxis are going to come by the end of 2026. That's what they mentioned. I'm not sure. And then we have the Dubai Loop, which is similar to the, I think it was the loop that they built in Los Angeles. For specific places where the car can go underneath.
Yeah. I read about this. Elon Musk is doing something, isn't he? Yeah. So it's just like a taxi.
So they're setting the plan right here in Dubai as well for that as well. So they're trying to pick up the pace so fast just to match up with the rate of the population surge that is happening here. You're talking about a fast-moving, paced city. Very fast. On the go.
It's thinking outside the box, though. It's just like, it's not just normal roads. We'll build underground roads and then we'll get taxis that fly.
And even a sewer system, because of what happened in the flood that you've seen last year, 2024, April 16, I believe, or April 14, we had a terrible flood that happened that time. And because of that, now they're building a $1 billion worth of sewage system. Just to assure that something like that doesn't ever happen. And if it does happen, we already have the system that can reduce the damages that could potentially come from flood.
Yeah.
Sure. So Dubai is a very fast-paced city. Even the time. I don't know if you watch your time, but you feel like the moment your time just goes much more faster than any other city.
I was just thinking that in the car. I was like, where's this year gone? I was like, it's nearly summer. I remember January like this.
2025 is almost like half done. Yeah.
I think it's a pro and a bit of a con. Life goes so quick here because you're so busy. You can do anything here.
For sure. For sure. And with the commute as well, I think the commuters will take much of the part of the time.
Yeah.
If you think about it, especially during the traffic times. Now, let's get back to fitness. Since you're the expert in the fitness field. What is the simplest fitness routine that absolutely anyone could start tomorrow?
I think what a lot of people do is overthink the process of actually getting into shape, that especially with all the technology there is now. You know, you need a Whoop band, you need like a trackers, you need trainers, all this kind of stuff, right? But you need to make your environment friendly to whatever the goal may be, you know, because, for example, if you need to get up before work to go to the gym, make sure you've got everything done the night before so you can literally put your bag up and go. Whereas, you know, you don't want to be up at 4 a.m. scrambling through the dark trying to get your trainers. You need to make it a friendly environment to get to the goal. And in reality, a lot of people think, you know, weight loss is probably the biggest thing. You just need to eat less and move more. And I know it sounds so cliche, but a lot of people are sat down at desks all day. But like non-exercise activity, thermogenesis, is the movement you do throughout the day. The other 23 hours that you're not in the gym, or if you're not in the gym at all, you're burning calories. And me doing this now, I will be burning very small amounts of calories throughout the whole day. So steps are kind of like the goat of weight loss combined with a calorie deficit. So if you have those two things, you will lose body fat. And you combine it with strength training and protein, you will gain muscle mass. And then obviously you do that until you get to a certain point where you'll start to plateau. And that's where you need to dial in your metrics with your macros and your calories and take things more seriously. But a lot of the things to get started are very basic, that people don't do it because they don't set a plan. They don't set a time period. They don't make their environment friendly to do that, if that makes sense.
Oh, I heard about a rule about like, make sure you get 10,000 steps a day.
It's not 10. No, that's like, you know, it's just a, you know, 10K.
Is that something, a myth or true? Like, should someone, like, would it really lose fat, a lot of fat, if you get 10,000 steps every day?
Only if you're in a calorie deficit, yeah. But the problem is, why steps are so good is because it keeps your heart rate nice and low. Because you know you've got zones, so zone 1 to 4. And if you go into zone 3 and 4, you'll be hitting your glycogen levels, which is your carbohydrates, which means your appetite is going to be going up because you're doing things like HIIT training and running. So marathon runners may even put on weight during training because, you know, they've got a higher appetite. So if you're just walking throughout the day, it's specifically just going into your fat stores and your appetite's nice and low, you know, so it doesn't increase like the amount of food consumption.
The hunger.
Yeah.
In that case. Right. So what would you say is like a nutritional rule that is always effective?
Fasting helps.
Mm.
You know, calories can't really tell the time. And I'm not saying you can eat whenever you want. Like, eating before bed will not be great for digestion and it'll spike, like, you know, your sugar levels and whatnot. But say, for example, you pushed your first meal back until lunchtime, meaning you've kind of skipped breakfast. So you're having your breakfast at lunch and then you're having lunch at dinner, meaning you've got space for another meal before bed if you choose to have it. But the likelihood is you'll already be quite full from having a late lunch. That makes sense. So by simply pushing your meals back will help you. That's a really basic.
Well, what would you say for someone who's looking to build muscles? Wouldn't they need to eat earlier and then eat a lot of protein, split this protein into different types of meals?
Yeah. I mean, having protein more regularly will be more beneficial. It'll keep you fuller for longer. But also, it's about consistency. Muscle takes time. So if you're trying to do this in 6 weeks, 4 weeks, it's not going to happen. It takes years to pack on muscle. You can lose body fat a lot quicker, but people also need to remember you can't target fat loss. It just comes off your entire physique.
Interesting. How do you define that you're actually getting increased in muscle mass? Is it through the weights that keep increasing in terms of the weightness, level, heaviness, or is it more so about, let's say, for example, I bench I bench 200 pounds, for example, and then I increase that weight every time. Does that mean my muscles has increased if I'm increasing the weight of that I'm lifting?
I mean, it's two things. Obviously, the way you look in the mirror, you know, don't listen to the scales because muscle weighs more than fat. So you want to look on how you're looking in the mirror, take measurements as well of your different body parts. And also what you said there, you're doing progressive overload, meaning you're stacking up weight every single week, which is great. So you will be increasing muscle mass because you need more muscle to lift more weight, essentially.
So it means that my muscle mass is increasing.
For sure, yeah. So when you are training, a lot of people end up doing the same cycle all year, you know, going in and just putting the same reps on. You need to start to like do progressive overload, whether it's to beat yourself by a minute, a set, a rep, a weight, and just track slowly to make sure you are improving in what area you want to go into. You know, so if you are wanting to get bigger and stronger, make sure the weights are going up, you know, and try to focus on the right rep range between 8 and 12, which is mainly hypertrophy.
Interesting. Because a lot of people say, no, do 4 sets. Another one says, no, you got to do 3 sets. Another one says, no, you got to do supersets and drop sets.
Do you know what?
It's like a lot of different techniques. So it's like,
everyone's,
how you can improve.
Everyone's got an opinion. But the one thing that people can't deny is consistency. And like, you know, my training has changed a lot throughout the years. I used to be huge, but now I'm very functional, but I hold my muscle mass quite well now, you know. You've got to find what you enjoy and then you will be consistent and then you will get results, you know. Looking good is just a byproduct of the consistency with your training and nutrition. And you'll only do that if you enjoy it. I luckily like chicken broccoli and rice, so it's easy for me to stay in shape, you know. But I also love training. It makes me feel good. It's therapy to me as well.
Interesting. You know, the only time that I actually seen my abs was when I was a boxing athlete in the United States. Other than that, I never seen my abs again.
Huh?
I don't know. It's like I don't drink or I don't smoke or do anything like that. But for some reason, I'm still not able to reduce the fat to the point level where I can just see my abs. Like back then when I was in the United States, I was boxing. I was training 4 hours a day. So I was training a lot. I was doing cardio in the morning and then I was doing boxing in the night. So it was keeping me losing a fat. And I was even being very deficient in the calories because I had to reach a certain weight limit so I can fight. And ever since that, I could not reach the same level that I had.
What's your bad habits?
Huh? My bad habits?
Do you snack or midnight snack? I don't know.
Not really, no. I would say that if I love to eat sometimes fruits. That's for sure. That's the only thing that is a bad habit, maybe.
Not bad.
Well, other than that, I don't drink. I don't eat junk food as much. I eat much of my food from home. Everything is cooked. I try to avoid oil being cooked. So everything is through air fryer. So
do you move enough?
Maybe that's one of the options. Maybe I don't sleep enough. Good.
Okay, so if you're not sleeping enough, you might...
I'm sleeping like 6 hours a day. That's it.
So are you stressed?
Maybe. I don't feel like I'm stressed, but maybe my body's stressed from overwork.
Maybe. So your cortisol levels might be high, meaning your water retention around your midsection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And people try and outwork that. And you've got to understand the importance of recovery. You know, I was guilty of this. I know this. You know, people do 6-7 days of training and work and then they sleep less and it's just get up, I'll outwork it, I'll outrun it. And you will crash at some point, but also your body's under so much stress, your nervous system, you know.
Without us even realizing it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But as men, during men, usually you just want to get up and go. You know, we're built for this kind of stuff.
Exactly.
And then you put like a motivational YouTube on and then you go again. And it's just an endless cycle. But you need to, I think there's something I've really locked into the last 2 years is rest. Just, you know, have 2 days where I try and just be pretty still. Not only physically, but with my mind. You know, like when I arrived here, asking myself questions like, am I being the person that I need to be? Am I recovering enough? You know, I'm just listening to myself a little bit more.
So how can someone like a busy person like me, who's a professional on a specific field, realistically integrate fitness in my daily life and assure that I'm not really stressing myself out and my body and working against it?
Okay, well, there's 3 pillars that I like to work off that to have a fulfilled life, I feel, right? And usually it's like, there should be 4. Being spiritual is the 4th, I think. But your career, your relationship, and then your health, right? It's got off those 3. And I feel like if any one of those drop, it affects the others. So like if you don't spend time with your family, you know, it might affect you mentally, so you won't be able to go to work. But the main pillar is if you don't look after your health, you cannot look after your family or work. So people need to prioritize looking after themselves with their health. And it's, you know, everyone's got a million problems till you've got a health problem and you've got just one. And people brush it to the side all the time, you know. And people, again, overthink how to get in prime, optimal shape, right? But it's lots of little daily habits that compound over lots of period of time. It's not one drastic thing you need to do for a short period of time. So, you know, for someone yourself, like very busy, it's about not doing your 10K steps. It's about just doing 4 or 5.
Mm.
2 20-minute walks, 30-minute walks per day, 1 in the evening, 1 in the morning, you know, and then we look at your nutrition as well. Maybe just stop eating on a morning and pushing that fasting window a little bit back, you know, small things that just compound over time and then you will get long-term results.
Do you think that people should definitely match their protein intake more than anything else?
What do you mean?
Like in terms of like, you got to reach this threshold of protein intake. Let's say if you're weighing 75 kilograms, you got to at least get 2 grams per kilogram until you match that. So if it's a 75, you got to get at least 150 grams of protein.
Your proteins, focus on calories and proteins. They're the 2 that I really tell people to focus on, because otherwise people get confused with all the macros and calories, right? But your protein is going to keep you fuller for longer. It's going to make sure you've got more muscle mass. With more muscle mass, it's the higher your metabolism, so it's easier to stay lean. And then you can focus on your calorie intake. These are 2 really easy metrics to track with all the technology you have nowadays. So I just focus on those 2. The carbs and your fat is just your energy sources. So depending on how much variety you want with your diet. So if you're doing like, you know, carnivore, your carbs will be really low and your fats will be high.
What about in terms of doing your biological blood test? I feel like a lot of people miss that. Like looking at the deeper level, your zinc, your magnesium, your all your blood, your hormone levels, making sure that this is everything is aligned before even thinking about stepping up and exercising, assuring that your body is right and fit to get the most optimal benefits on that.
So that's another great thing about Dubai. You can get that done. I think a lot of people in other countries, you can't do that. And I get it done every 6 months. But you shouldn't wait to exercise and eat right before, like, you shouldn't, sorry, what should I say? You shouldn't, like, wait to get your blood test before you start exercising and eat right. You know, you should do that. And then you get supplements that are going to help boost the process, you know, based off your deficiencies. But exercise and eating well will always be the basics, the fundamentals of improving, like, the foundations of yourself, you know. But I highly recommend going to do that because, like, I went and got my bloods done and my magnesium was low, so I have that. And now I sleep like a baby because I've had more. So it's good to get a full reading and an MOT of your
body. I think it's very important because a lot of people miss that. They think that just eating right and exercising will just help them out.
I mean, it's the basics. And because a lot of people buy all these supplements. And this is something I used to do when I was younger. You just go into a shop and you'd buy like your omega-3s and your zincs, your vitamin C. I didn't know if I was deficient in it. You just seen it on like some marketing TV program. You thought it was good for you, right? So it's good to have the understanding of what you are deficient in, but your basics will come from your nutrition and your movement. Won't rely on supplements.
Now, we talked enough about fitness. Let's go into business right now. With your social media growth, what was that one decision right now that dramatically boosted your business growth?
Which metric was it?
With your social media, how did you been able to leverage all that attention and everything to now, like, I'm going to do a business and be able to maximize that leverage?
It wasn't a specific point. It was just constantly building. But I did start to, like, change my content strategy as I started to get more business savvy. It was always based around fitness. So I remember when I was with my training, everything happened so slow. And what we teach people to do in literally like 3 to 6 months, it took me like 8 years, man. And so like through my 20s, even towards like 27, I didn't really have much. I was still just coaching. But I had this audience and I didn't know how to leverage it correctly. But then I started putting some content strategies together and I changed my systems and I realized you're only as good as your systems. And then I started doing low ticket. I built an app, then I did high ticket. And all of a sudden by changing the foundation of, you know, my systems and the infrastructure, then my business grew. So the following, yes, it's helpful, but it's only helpful if you have a system to help monetize it.
And was this system that is leveraging and taking the leads, is it done through organic ways or through the ad spend?
So mine was organic and it still is heavily organic. I feel like you need to try and exhaust your organic before going into ads because, I mean, if you're fortunate enough to. But, you know, if you're jumping straight into ad spend, there's not as much trust. People are coming to me organically because they're seeing my content. They've probably, you know, seen it a few times and then they start to trust me because in the day, if you want a lead to purchase, there needs to be an element of trust there. And that happens over some...
Over time when they're following you, they're looking at your stories and then they start to trust you even more and then they become your customers.
Yeah. And ad spend is just like, you know, it's forced, but it works. It works very well.
It works, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, I always feel like you're very similar to your friends. I've seen a podcast with you and Mike Thurston.
Yeah.
So you're very close in the same niche, the same type of thing. He does his own mastermind. You're doing your own mastermind. But he doesn't do that one-to-one training, I would say. He's more of a has his own app.
We did it with him.
You did it with him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's what when we started doing the coaching. So we did a little bit with him. But me and Mike go back about 14 years. We went to both went to like Newcastle University. Both did the same jobs at university, and then we both end up here. But no, he doesn't. What Mike's done of really well is to create a life of absolute freedom. He's created his own TV show with YouTube, and anyone going to social media now, I highly recommend focusing on YouTube, because the trust value is so much more than fast-paced content. You know, people, you can watch a three-minute video and by the end of it, you're kind of like already bought into somewhere. So he's created his own show, and then he's gone into Low Ticket, which is just recurring revenue.
The thirst app.
It's like, I think it's like $10 a month, but he's got volume there. But and it doesn't require much, if any, accountability for the, because the price is so low. You don't expect to speak to Mike Thurston for $10 a month, right? So yeah, he's done a very good job of building this empire around that.
It's very interesting that he's been able to do that all organically through just his image.
He's built like a Greek god, bro. Like, is everyone wants to look like Mike, right? And then obviously now he's created an empire, and there's a lot more than meets the eye than just his body. Now you can see, like, you know, he's educated, he's got his podcasts and his YouTube, he's actually speaking on education. That's how his YouTube grew.
Absolutely. And he started just like, I think much of his growth happened here in Dubai. He came here,
yeah,
beginning, showcasing his journey that he's living here in Dubai, this is what it was, and just slowly picked up. And I think even a lot of fitness influencers came to Dubai because of him.
For sure. He came before the surge of, before everyone came, essentially. Like, he, I don't know what the reason was originally why, but now it's true.
Interesting. So going back to your business, how can someone monetize their passion quickly and effectively, maybe in the fitness field?
There's difference. If you want it quick, you know, it's usually not going to be long lasting, because you need to build trust again, like I was saying. But so, for example, if you're a fitness coach and you know you have a large or even a small audience, if you want fast results, you go into a high ticket coaching space. And in a world that is evolving so fast around AI, human to human interaction is going to be so valuable. So for you to offer a high ticket, high accountability package for someone who wants your attention to get from A to B within their physique, you can charge a hell of a lot more than if it was a thirst app, for example, right? And a lot of people don't have the volume that Mike has. So if you are a coach wanting to start out, you may not, and this is one of the hardest parts about it, you might not have the self-belief that you can charge a high ticket price because you haven't done it yet. But if you want to go fast to get to A to B within, like, you know, your first year and hit your first 10K, as everyone says, you'd have to do a high ticket product.
A high ticket product, just to, you know, instead of getting 100 customers, you can get one customer that can just get that 100.
Exactly. You know, like, I know coaches who would have like 50, 60 clients charging like a lower price and then be so burnt out. And I was like, why don't you try upsell half of those people to a high ticket product, get half your time back, you know, and then that actually takes away the time from the other people. So
what would you say that price range is for that high ticket product?
So anything from $300 to $500 a month could be considered as high ticket.
Okay.
But then it can go through the roof. We've got some clients charging like $35,000 for
a month.
No, for a package. It'll be okay. for 6 to 12 months.
Okay.
But obviously that's only through people who have had a lot of credibility in the space, and then it kind of goes even further into like blood work and stuff like that.
You're talking about $35,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But you've got like, there's a niche.
How do you find those people that are willing to pay that?
Come to Dubai. There's a niche for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
You've got to put yourself in the right place. And also, a lot of the people who are doing those big numbers like that, they come from a very, like, a place of authority. So one of the guys who's doing really well with us, he's an SAS SEAL. And he speaks, so he almost speaks down to his audience, like, you know, like you've been a little and so and so.
So similar to David Goggins.
Yeah, exactly like that. And people are just like, I need to man up. I need this guy to hold me accountable. That's right. Because there's a lot of people who are very, very successful businessmen. But, you know, when you strip away the watches, the cars, the $2,000 suit, when you look in the mirror and you're not in shape, are you like, you know, what do you think of yourself? That's the kind of questions you've got to ask these people, because that's their pain point. And they do so well in business, but they don't look after their health as well.
Has there ever been a failure that happened in your business?
Every failure has been a lesson. You know, there's always tweaks. I mean, that's the beauty of business. You're constantly stressed and the goalpost always moves, you know? I wouldn't consider anything a failure. I'd consider it a lesson to not do the same thing twice.
Interesting. Would you say that AI is going to impact the way you do work today?
For sure. For sure. I think it's something that people need to be really aware of. And if you're not locking into it now, you're going to get left behind. If you're not providing value, like the one thing that people really need to get their head around is creating a personal brand. That's the one thing AI won't be able to take away really from anyone, I don't think. So now more than ever is so important to be able to do that. But if you're just providing cookie cutter programs, you're already out of the game. If you go on ChatGPT now, you could you could get your bloods done and then you could put in your goal, everything, all the metrics, give me 16-week training plan or one for the rest of the year. It will do it and it will speak.
Does it do it right?
I mean, it does it pretty correctly, yeah. But all the information from all over the internet, you know?
I think you can even, to the point, analyze your body image. So if you send pictures of your body.
Yeah, you can.
And tell, this is my body right now. I want to become like this body. What are the steps that I need to do? And potentially you can analyze your body in details and then be able to tell you how to go there.
Yeah.
Forward, step by step.
But then again, there is cons to that as well. So human-to-human interaction is going to be so important around that, because people will, but not that they're going to get bored of AI because it's going to be so effective, but they want to speak to someone.
And you said you need someone to hold that accountability, to hold you in point and saying, hey, you're not doing things right. You got to do it.
But I'm pretty sure in a few years, you're going to have, Jarvis off Iron Man.
Okay.
You're able to, wake up. Wake up, bro. Put your trainers on. I'm pretty sure that'll happen.
Maybe they can tune it to Joss Moni's
my voice.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And that maybe you'll be selling your own copyrighted,
well, then you're
artificial.
Then you're in the
Joss voice.
Then it's not even coaching anymore.
Yeah. So what is this harsh truth about fitness do people often refuse to accept?
Sorry, say that again, please.
What is the harsh truth about fitness do people often refuse to accept?
Well, they refuse to accept about fitness.
Yes, the reality of fitness, maybe. They refuse to accept.
I don't really know.
So has there been anything something where people are just accepting this myth when it's reality, this is not true?
I'm not sure I understand.
For example, they think if they don't eat food at all, maybe that's it. If they keep fasting, they'll lose the weight and they'll just keep losing weight and they'll function correctly. Maybe of the rumors that they are implementing today that was considered wrong.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many fads and diets. They're more like trends, a carnivore diet.
Like bro science, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's hilarious, yeah. So there's so much stuff you can listen to, and it's all marketing. Everyone's marketing for something, and they're only marketing stuff based off things that work for them. So anyone who's selling you a carnivore diet, because they're doing it for a little bit, they probably haven't even done it for that long, but in reality it all comes down to the metrics.
Like Liver King. Yeah, remember about his story? He's just selling he was eating raw food, literally raw stuff. I don't know how was that even legal, if anyone gets food poisoning from this.
Exactly. But it turns out he was on steroids anyway. But he, that was just kind of a hook. It was just like, it got your attention. I guarantee you probably doesn't even do that all the time, you know? And that's the thing. Half of the internet nowadays is new diet plans and marketing based around just what kind of gets the most eyeballs, you know? You know, that, like all these hooks nowadays that people use.
Just to attention grabbing.
Attention grabbing. So I guess what the point is like, don't fall into the trap of keep trying to change a nutrition or a training plan. Just find something that you enjoy and be consistent with it. That's the thing.
I know in your business, you also teach coaches to become better, successful business people. But what do you think is the reason for some of those talented trainers makes them fail to become a successful entrepreneur?
Doing the boring stuff, ego, consistency. It really frustrates me because I got some with my team this morning. But like, we have some of the biggest influencers and fitness coaches, and I see this quite a lot. And they have so much potential, but they're too willing, unwilling to do the boring work. You know, like if I went back to my journey, I would do 100 messages every single morning without fail while I did my cardio and walk around a park. And people now want automations, they want DM setters, they want people to do the work for them, they want out the conversations, they think they're too good to message everyone. But if you're not willing to do the boring stuff yourself, what gives you the right to be as successful as you want to be, you know? So I think that really comes down to it. The boring stuff works. And until you can find someone to do that for you after you've done it, so you can teach them the right way to do it within your business, then you can move up.
It's like you learn the set of skills that you need to thrive, and then you teach others to thrive and delegate it to them.
Yeah. Everyone's looking for a quick fix.
Mm.
It's like, you know, a great example is, right, you've got a coach who's got 1,000 followers, right? And they'll be like, oh, I need to run ads. Let's run ads. Okay, I'll get some ads together. That's before even looking at actually what they've got. You put 1,000 people in a room, it's a lot of people. If you do a high ticket product and you DM every 1,000 followers, right, you're not telling me you can sell 10 high ticket packages. And that is probably a hell of a lot more money than they're on now, you know? So they need to break everything down and just get their hands dirty a little bit within their business.
Got it. Let's say we say tomorrow you lost your entire social media following. What would be your first move?
Well, I'd start a new one. I'd start a new one, and I would start following all the people who I find influential straight away. I'd have a content strategy built off with ChatGPT ASAP. I'd literally put my situation into ChatGPT and ask it to tell me what to do. That's what I do. But then I'd start posting relentlessly, more than I would be today.
Where would you post more? So Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn?
I'd focus on Instagram and YouTube.
Instagram and YouTube.
Yeah.
TikTok?
No. I feel like the audience on there is not the right people I want to attract. I feel like the combination, the tie between Instagram and YouTube is good. I think Instagram's like a short version of what you could be posting on YouTube. It's like the image, the reel, and then you want to see the full version. And then you direct that to YouTube, and then that can be directed to call to actions, to book calls and whatnot. And that's where you really get the trust and value is from the YouTube.
I feel like the highest quality leads you get from YouTube.
For sure. Look at anyone. And like, this is something I regret massively, right? Like, look at Mike, for example. Again, Iman Gaz is another one. They started YouTube around 8 to 10 years ago. Anyone who did that, I'm pretty sure is successful, either with an external business or just off the views, which have compounded to provide some sort of, you know, passive income. So,
and YouTube is a tough game. Like, you can post a lot of videos and still take time to develop it compared to social media like Instagram and TikTok.
It's a long game.
Yeah.
But what's even longer is not doing it and then working a 9-to-5 for the next 20 years, right?
Exactly.
So you see these kids, yeah, and they're posting about games on, like, who's that guy in America? Jack Doherty, right? I think the guy's like 20 or 19 or whatever. He's got like 10 million subscribers. He has more money than he knows what to do with, right? And that's because he posts rubbish. every day, and people watch it. And by watching it, he's, you know, getting paid for it. So that's purely just by being consistent with something shows.
Interesting. I mean, but there's a lot of people who are just as much as maybe this guy trying to post every day about their video games, but still not succeed just as much as he did. I think it also has to do a lot with people liking you as a person. I mean, people like maybe Mike Thurston for how he looks, how he talks, maybe. But mostly, I think for the physique, he looks something different than the most norms that you most see. And that's what's attracting people. Like, oh, who's this big guy living in Dubai? What does he do? Like, then they want to know more about him because he got a different physique. He looks different than most people or most men in that cases.
I think you've got to play two roles, isn't there? There's like the good guy or the villain, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Jake Paul is a good example. Like, he plays the villain. Everyone like kind of semi hates him, but he then uses that and then builds a brand around it, and eyeballs still go towards it.
True. So if we're going to end this podcast, what's that one daily habit that has genuinely transformed your life and could do the same for the listeners?
One daily habit.
Like, this has dramatically changed your life.
I think something that I've had drilled into me since a young age. I lost my father when I was 16. And that was a point in my life where I was, I needed to shift my energy and use it. Otherwise, I was going to lose it. And exercise was where I started to channel that. And so my default mode where I was lowest in my life at that point, I was very young, I had nothing, no direction. And I think if you can make your lowest version of yourself, your default mode, a productive one where you go for walks and you run, and you can, if you eat healthy as well, that's your lowest version of you. You will always come out on top, because you never regret a workout, as everyone says, right? And I think that's something that has been built in me since a young age. So that habit of thinking whenever I'm stressed, or even when I'm happy, or I need to think, I will actually run and I'll walk, because I think better when I'm doing it. I move. You never feel bad after you've had a workout. You think so much more clearly. You know, you're in happy endorphins, blood pumping around your body. And I know it sounds like such a cliche, but that, for me, exercise has saved my life. I'm not saying I was going to like doing the grace, but it has been like the saving grace of my life.
They always say, like, when you're in the lowest points, go to the gym.
When you look around the gym, especially bodybuilding gyms, there's a lot of angry young men in there. And I was one of them, you know, but then it could have gone the other way. I could have, you know, gone down to the local shop when I was underage and tried to like start drinking and all that, you know, start doing.
You could have used your lowest point for something bad, but you
exactly.
Used it for something good for yourself.
So,
which is great.
Yeah, I think if there's any daily habit that's changed my life, it's just not exercising for the sake of aesthetics. It's for the sake of mental clarity.
Mm. I think that's a sound advice for young kids out there who are maybe having their lowest points. Maybe they got dreams crushed somehow. They lost their girl or something like that. And maybe they can use that energy that they have to channel and train to get that clarity, to get that physique maybe, and to build themselves. It shapes them. I mean, the gym, the training, everything shapes them to become a better version of themselves.
There's no downside.
Yeah.
There's no downside to it.
So one thing that you can do when you're, I think, that's truly beneficial for you, right?
That's what your trainers on, man.
Yeah. Rather than sitting at home and crying about it. For sure. For sure. Well, Josh, thank you so much for being here. I think a lot of people got great value out of this. I'm sure, how could they reach out to you if they need anything?
So you can reach me on Instagram at Josh Mooney, or if you want to check out my agency, it's Apex Agency and 2 underscores on Instagram.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.